I'm sorry. Reload the transmitter. I was down the bottom of the bed with Timmy and Janie and Eric, CAU. But anyway, put the transmitter back up here. Everything is good. As can be. So, it's been a very strange couple of days. Waiting on a call from my daughter because my dad's in hospice dying. So, you know, other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? But I'm doing fine.
Yeah, what'd they say about the surgery?
I won't know anything for, you know, another week. Very optimistic that it's, you know, not going to be a big deal. So he didn't find any more cancer to remove, maybe a tiny bit. And other than that, I'm sure I'll live to a ripe old age and be a pain in the ass.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you're going to be bothering you're going to be bothering Colleen and the rest of us for at least another 30 years, right?
You're already a pain in the ass.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Yeah, it's just been a crazy couple of days there. So, but, hey, I hope things went well on your appraisal.
I haven't heard anything. I have not heard a thing. So, we shall see. The real estate agents say no news is good news. I don't know exactly what that means, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, the guy was there. He seemed to really like the house. Matter of fact, he even commented. He said, well, this is definitely not your cookie-cutter builder's house, when he was walking around and checking things out. So, you know, maybe he was just being nice, or maybe he said this house is worth more than these cookie cutter builders' houses, which hopefully is what he said.
KG2IR, congratulations.
I don't have the numbers yet, so no congratulations yet.
I'm being optimistic. And I hope things are going well with you, Brett. I was listening a little bit, got rid of the noise on my receivers, and good to play radio. KG2IR.
The popcorn noise stopped. Yay.
Hey, hi, Nick. I thought I heard Wayne in there making comments. I think I'm, you know, gonna head upstairs and see if Colleen and wants to get some breakfast or something. So. But, no, things are okay. Just, you know, a little melancholy. Ran into that phone call. My dad saw that coming for a while, but it's pretty strange to be, you know, having to deal with this while I was in the hospital. So I'm leaving and he's going. So something poetic about that.
Yeah, sorry to hear it, Brent. I went through that with my brother a number of years ago. He was younger than me. You know, that's one of the things you worry, you think about occasionally, hopefully only occasionally, when you get older, is the fact that you're going to go is how you're going to go. And slowly, and with illnesses like that, hospice requirements and everything, it's not a fun way to go. Got to do it like Howie, WS2Q, planning on getting on a plane to go to California, and that was the end. If there's any poetic justice to it. Best of luck with that. Glad to hear that they came through the other side pretty nicely with the surgery and the results. Anyway, enjoy, guys. In fact, I just got back from a doctor's visit. I had to go over it first thing this morning. I had, let's see, what's the technical or the medical term? IOI, intraocular implants. Commonly known as cataract surgery. I had one eye done on December 9th, another one on the 28th. And I just went for my final visit. The eye pressures are down around 13 or 14, which is excellent. And both eyes for an almost 81-year-old guy, 20/20.
And I bet your color fidelity is a lot better.
My big problem is now I got to buy a pair of glasses that kind of blurs things up a little bit. I see all the defects defects of my surroundings. You know, tile that's cracked. And I said, you know, the tile's got a crack. And she says, yeah, it's been like that for about 40 years. 14 years. That's one thing you notice. Anyway, the rest of my body I have to deal with, but the eyes are doing well. Not much else. A bright sunny day. And I'll comment on what the noise was on my next transmission. Over.
Do you have to wear reading glasses? In other words, is your eye a fixed focus for distance? Do you wear reading glasses?
I have. The best way to put it is my eyesight is about a 42-year-old when presbyopia starts influencing your near focal capability, where the lens is getting harder. Because these lenses are acrylic. And I question it also, do they make them flexible enough that the muscle activity in the eyeball can bend it like you were when you were kids to close focus? And they said, well, they had that for a while, but it wasn't working out too well, so they stick with this. And you can get lenses that have, you know, the bottom of the lens is more intensified than the top of it. I said, no, just put the regular lens in. And I can actually read most things, not small print. He says, you know, you don't even need a prescription. You don't need anything. Just go to a drugstore, buy a half a dozen of these reading glass things, probably about one and a half diopter is all you need, and use those. If you want to get stronger, it won't hurt your eyes, but that's all you're going to need. But I just got to tell you, I was really surprised. I had 20/25 in the left eye, and the right eye was the most recent surgery. I was coming down to 20/20. But I can read just about anything except close-up and fine print. So that I need glasses for. In fact, I got to get my aviator sunglasses. For years, had a prescription for near and far vision. I got to get the lenses changed to just clean it. Glass, you know, colored glass, which is quite astounding. Because you not only see clearer, more sharply, you get your bandwidth and the color spectrum back. Because cataract lenses are like a low-pass filter. You lose the blue region, blue and up to ultraviolet, which of course you don't use. And it's, you get that roll-off, and you don't realize it because white is really like a yellow-green. Because I was comparing it with a good eye, bad eye situation. And I kind of fudge measured between my right eye, which was just done, and my left eye, which was done first. And it looked like I improved the light sensitivity by 2 f-stops. Now, that's quite a bit. I mean, everything was super bright. And the colorimetry is unbelievable how good it looks. So you get 3 things. Sharpness, especially at distant vision. As I started crowing, I could see a gnat scratching its ass at 200 meters, you know. It was just unbelievable. At least it seemed like it. So, yes, I kind of need reading glasses, but only for reading fine print, because, I mean, watching TV or reading anything, you know, within a foot or 2 feet at reasonable character height, I have no problem at all. It's really great.
Yeah, excellent. This is WNQIX. Yeah, if I put my contacts in, I have to use, because I can see up close without glasses. I have to wear reading glasses for sure. It's like I can't read that. Put my reading glasses on, you know, then I can read it fine. That sounds good. Hey, listen, I'm going to be there soon there, Nick. It's just a matter of time. Last time I went to the you can have your cataracts done any time. So one of these days I'm going to do it.
Well, you know, you don't want to rush into it. I mean, this guy is really good. He happens to be the head of the ophthalmology department for the hospital network for the hospital. The hospital, I think, he did this for Thomas Stanford. So it was real convenient. But he's been taking care of my eyesight nigh on to maybe 15, 16, 18 years. Because, you know, every 6 months, 6 months, I get eye tests. because of the FAA certification, I was flying commercially. And even when I wasn't, I'd get at least once a year. So we had a good baseline, a good history. And, you know, he was telling me, you know, you got cataract activity on this eye, and your left eye is going a little faster than the right eye. He says, but, you know, I'm not going to, I really don't like to do surgery on people. He says, if you're comfortable, you're okay with it, your lifestyle, you don't have to do anything. We can always address it. Because, you know, you can only do this once. Once you remove the natural eye lens, which I wasn't fully aware of the anatomy of the eye, because the eye, I always thought the lens was in the front of the iris, which is also underneath the cornea, and it's not. It's behind the iris in the vitreous and aqueous humor area of the eyeball. So, and he went through this surgery in great detail to show me what has to be done to make this happen. It's quite ingenious. And they did have lenses for a while, like I said, that could be bent by the muscle tissue, almost like a young person, but it doesn't work out too well. And I got all kinds of other fancy lenses. If you do it on Medicare, it doesn't cost you anything. If you do anything other than the standard lens, which is what I have, the standard lens, you end up paying money out of your pocket, which is not a lot. It's about $1,000 per eye. I mean, it's a lot of money, but relative to paying nothing, but it's not that bad. Not with medical costs today. But he even said to me, you don't need it. He said, you don't need it. Now, I'm going to be 81 in May. Being old buzzard, I'm an old buzzard like Wayne. And it's just amazing what they can do. And this acrylic lens, you do it once, and that's it for the rest of your life. You can't go back. You can't change the lens. You can't do anything. You're done. Because of the way that procedure is affected and the way the lens is mounted and everything else. It's quite ingenious how it works. but I recommend it. If you don't need it, you don't have to. But I'll tell you something. If you've got cataracts in both eyes and you do one eye at a time always, when you have the one done and you compare it to the other eye, it's unbelievable. There's just no way to describe it. It's like you bought a brand new television set. You repainted your whole house. The whole neighborhood has this deeper green. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable what you were giving up, and the brain was trying to deal with it and compensate as much as it could. And it did a pretty good job, you know. But when you compare the two, it's just amazing. For anyone who's had it, they'll say the same thing. And I even explained to the surgeon, I said, unless you've had cataract surgery, you can't appreciate what I'm seeing. And I'm sure other patients have told you, because it's just quite amazing. It's one of the medical technologies that's really panned out very well with little or no side effects. And the only side effects you could have is usually dry eye, where you use over-the-counter artificial tears. And that just goes on for a period of time because of the, even though mild, but the invasiveness of the surgery. The surgery itself is a non-event. It really is. I mean, it's what they do in that time and how quickly he could do. I think the second eye, he had 7 IOIs that day. And he says the procedure is about between 25 and 35 minutes. There's more preparation with eye drops and all the other stuff and the paperwork and the CYA paperwork that's needed. So they make sure that everything, the I's are dotted, T's are crossed. The procedure itself is almost nothing. No pain, no nothing. So, and yes, they use anesthesia. And it's quite detailed on what they do, but it's of no concern to the patient. It really isn't. Anyway, sorry about that long-winded transmission. KG2IR.
Well, it's certainly interesting. Make sure I'm not doubling. Yeah. Yeah, I notice it at night, like driving particularly. It's somewhat to drive at night on a rainy day because I just can't see. even at night when it's not raining, it's know, I wouldn't say it's a challenge, but it's definitely not like driving around at night or during the day. Because anytime there's a light, well, you know, you have it. When there's a light coming at you, I mean, it just expands it. It's like you're, it's like looking through fog. At least that's how it is with me. And you see some spokes. So you must have had the same thing. Well, very good, Nick. I'm glad it all worked out. So, I remember when John K1DEU had his done. It was the same thing. He was saying it's unbelievable the difference in color fidelity. It's like you have no idea what you're not seeing until you can see it again.
Oh yeah. Well, I didn't have too much trouble, even though I had the cataracts, and one was growing at an abnormal rate relative to the aging process, and the other one was proceeding at normal rate. So obviously I had the left eye, which was the worst eye, done first. And those two f-stop changes was relative to the better eye, you know. I did a little experimenting with a single-lens reflex camera and noted the changes in intensity of light. I'll explain that another time how I did it. But it came out to two f-stops, and that's quite impressive when you all of a sudden see things that are just so freaking bright. Because when you have the procedure done, they patch your eye, and the next day, the next morning, they uncover the eye, and that's it. You see, you know. So that's quite a shock. And when you see, and first of all, everything is too bright. You know, a dark room is a bright room. It's as simple said as that. And what you're experiencing at night, I mean, I look too bad. It's flare. In TV, we call it lens flare. What it looks like, these starbursts around a bright light where you don't have a definite round circle of light. It flares out. And that's partially due, which is part of the aging process of forms of astigmatism. But usually, it's not that bad. And of course, the cataracts or the clouding lenses amplify that because of how it diffuses light. But I never had any trouble driving at night. I mean, it bothered me, you know, that I could see the flaring and all that stuff, but it didn't bother me to the point where I couldn't do it or it was, you know, I couldn't see. Well, at least that's what I thought at the time. But now, forget it, you know. It's like being around 35 to 40 years old, just when you start to need reading glasses. That's about it. That's how far back my eyesight goes now. Maybe better, I don't even know. But the other thing, too, is your eyeball pressures. My pressures were hovering between 17 and 19. 21, they start to get concerned. And that's not too bad for an old guy. But now, they just measured it this morning. One eye is 14 and the other eye is 15. And that's a big factor in how you see bright, pointed light sources with darkness around it because of what the eyeball shape changes with any kind of astigmatism. But, you know, I don't know to what level you have any kind of cataract activity. But if it's covered by Medicare, then you have to be a certain level for it to be done. It's a combination of age and quantity of cataract invasion. You don't pay anything, you know. I mean, my insurance is you just walk in, sign a paper, and get the job done. But I did learn a lot about it, I got to tell you. All right down to the last detail of the procedures. It's quite spectacular. Now, the lens is actually folded up in like pie shape. And when you make the incision and clear out the other lens by using ultrasonic blasting and suction and lots of water, they use tons of amount of water on your eye. And how the lens flops open, and these like little winged devices grab on to eventually in a few days to the muscle tissue that's around, these strings of muscles that are around that grabs the eye, so the lens so it can move it and anchor it. And it's just amazing procedure how between Mother Nature and technology just holds hands real tightly and does a great job. It's amazing how it works. Anyway, I'm just rambling on, but if you have that situation, you know, I guess he's told you whether your cataract progression is faster than normal, which normal is the aging process, or equal to the aging process, maybe you can hold on. But, you know, in your case where you sit and you write software and you're constantly close up on a screen, like right now, my
video monitor is about 12 or 14 inches away from me, and I can read my emails and I can read, you know, anything on the screen with a typical 8 to 12 point lettering. I don't have large lettering for my emails, and I can read everything right now. I have no glasses. So to me, that's spectacular. And if they, you can get that done for you, that sure would make your life a lot easier, because that's what you do. That's your professional environment. You may want to consider it. And most of the guys are good at it. You know, it sounds like, say, well, I got to find a good doctor. This procedure or series of procedures is so well documented and thought out. And, you know, you literally go in, they size you up, they order the lens, it comes in, you know, and it's made for your eye size and everything else. And they put this thing in, and the next day you see, you know. And then I think perhaps the most, and it's minimally invasive, lifestyle is that you've got to use these drops. There's like it's a form of a prednisone 1% ophthalmic, but it's, you know, it's a steroid. There's an antibiotic, a steroid, and an ibuprofen drop system that you have to use, like a number of drops the first week and less drops the next week. And you go 3 weeks, and the fourth week is the end of it. And, of course, you're doing both eyes. I've been putting drops in my eyes since December. No big deal. And that's it. You know, it's no big deal. That's perhaps the most invasive part of the involvement of getting cataract surgery is actually dealing with the routine of remembering to put eye drops in your eyes to keep this level of eye drops going. But that's, to me, the most, I can't even use the word challenging, the most active part of IOI procedures, you know. But in your case, it might be, well, you're in your 60s, I believe. I didn't have, and I still didn't really have any problem. I just elected to do it. Because I don't do any close-up work. I have electronics and playing around, but I don't do it on a steady basis. Like, you're still actively working. Especially writing software, anything where you have a keyboard and a screen. But, you know, I don't have an unusually wide screen either. If you go on QRZ, and I think there's a picture of the station, you'll see the screen I use. And I can read this whole screen with no glasses at all. Boy, is that wonderful. KG2IR.
Yeah, I take my glasses off when I'm working at the computer because I can see just perfectly up close. Interesting. So do you have to use those drops forever or just for some good time?
No, it's 4 weeks. It's these are pre- and post-operative procedure. Pre-operative, about 4 days before, there's an antibiotic. There's also some wipes they tell you to use. You buy over-the-counter drugstore. Everybody, mostly Western and Northern Europeans, also has an ailment called blepharitis. And that's the glands along the eyelids that secretes the oil and everything from part of the tear-making system, too. It gets clogged, and you get these deposits, you know, and you get sleep in your eyes, and you wake up the next day, that kind of stuff. And everybody suffers from it to some degree for their whole lives. And they want you to try to minimize that. So they give you the wipes or your vitamin drugs along the counter. And you use those and you just wipe your actually mostly your eyelashes and stuff to keep that area clear. They try to get the area prepared for surgery by about a 4 or 5 day period before you're putting in some drops, two different prescriptions and the eye wipes. Then the day of the surgery, you don't do anything, obviously. And then the day after, you wait after till you take the patches off and you can proceed with your life. And then you start those drops again. And it's basically three different drops. And it starts something like four times a day, QID. You know, four times a day the first week, three times a day the second week, two times a day the third week, and once a day the last week. So it's about a four-week run of eye drops. And that's really it. You know, like I said, what it is, it's all preparation. And after the surgery is to keep the inflammation down, keep an antibiotic prophylactically in the eye, plus a steroid to help with the inflammation, if there is any. I really didn't have any, but, you know, he says, just do do it, you know. And I said, no problem, you know. And once in a while, you forget, you late, you forgot to put drugs in. You do it the next time, you know. It's no big deal. But it's mostly to keep the site clear and clean of any kind of possible nasties getting in there. And half the post-operative is to keep the inflammation down. And you can actually see it. I mean, you see wonderfully right after the procedure. But then, as the days wear on, your eyesight gets better and better and better. Because post-operatively, you go the day after the surgery, they unpatch you. A week after, check eye pressures, make sure they're going down because they raise because of the intrusion of the surgical procedure. And they're watching for any kind of infiltration of any kind of infection. And as you go along, as that the eye is so-called healing. And one thing, too, you know, is that they use a scalpel type instrument, because they actually raise the eyeball up out of the socket a reasonable distance, because he says, you know, it's tough working in a hole. Your eyelids, they put retractors on your eyelids, and they raise the eyeball, so they got to go behind the eye, they shift some anesthesia, and they just raise it up. You already have anesthetics. I mean, there's absolutely no sensation at all. And even when you're on the table, so to speak, you're looking up, and they've hit you with propanol, which is, I use it for colonoscopies. So you're kind of aware of what's going on, but you're not. In fact, I fell asleep while he was on the first eye, and I woke up, and I was a little startled because I couldn't remember where the hell I was in the middle of the procedure. Don't move, I'm doing surgery. But anyway, the second eye didn't bother me, but you're kind of awake, and everything's blurry, and you're draped, except for the eye that they're doing the procedure, so your whole face is draped. And you can feel the water, you know, as they're flushing and doing. I mean, it's just like, what is this going to be? You all of a sudden get up. They say, get up. So there's no real discomfort of any kind. But the eye drop system starts before it goes through past. You figure about a month. You know, the 4-drop, 3-drop, 2-drop, 1-drop for a week. Regimen of 3 different type drops. But it's let me tell you something. It's well worth the journey. Just incredible. You have no idea. Now, you have something my wife has where she can see up close, but she needs, you know, glasses for everything else. And she's been like that since she's 12. She's actually PO'd on me. She says, I'm so pissed off. I can read the fine print. You know, the disclaimers at the bottom of the TV screen, which were just straight lines of blur, even with glasses on. I can read everything. She says, you're making me sick. I remember when we were first married, and I started wearing glasses. I says, oh, man, I got to wear reading. She says, stop complaining. I've been wearing glasses since I was 12. She wears contacts and glasses and switches back and forth. But now she says, I'm jealous. I says, I'm glad, you know, everything else is much better on you than me. Because, you know, the arthritis is creeping in and all that other crap slowing down, I guess. But anyway, this is KG2IR, the eyeball hour.
Hello, Al. How you doing? Well, very interesting, Nick. Well, I just arrived at Bose Research and Development, so I'm going to go inside. And, the sun is out. Well, I mean, it's not totally out, but there's a break in the clouds. It was pouring rain for some of the drive. It would be foggy, and then it would rain, and then it would, stop raining, and right now there's a big hole in the clouds and the sun's out. So, yeah, very interesting. Well, we'll have to see. You know, eventually I have to have it done when, but at some point. I was kind of waiting around to see if they come up with a lens that can be focused. So that would be kind of nice. Anyway, Al, good morning to you. I'm going to turn it right over to you, and I've got to go inside here. So W1VTP. And the group here, W1QIX.
By the way, Steve, and hi, Al, that these lenses do change focal lengths. They just can't do very close-up because it's acrylic. But they do work, and I find that after a while, I'm able to read smaller and smaller print. I'll never be able to go completely without glasses, but it's amazing how far you can go with these acrylic lenses. And they kind of set, the industry kind of settled on this and leave it alone and just do it this way. And anyway, good to hear you, and enjoy your work day and go ahead out. Yeah, sorry about that. Just had both eyes done
between December and January 28th.
And I got the end results. And I was talking to
him about it.
He's coming up for it, you know, especially in his line of work.
And I was trying to explain
the change in your lifestyle when this happens. You get eyesight like when you're in your late 30s, early 40s, you know, assuming nothing else was wrong. And, it's just amazing. And, yeah, we got on that subject, and, of course, I was on the soapbox because I just had it all done. And I just came from the eye doctor, and he just tested my eye pressures at 14 on an eye and 20/20 vision in both eyes. But I still have to use glasses fine print up close. But like I say, I can read my computer screen with emails at, 8 and 12-point type heights. No problem, no glasses. Anyway, good morning to you. Good to hear you. I was having such difficulty the last bunch of days. And since Saturday, actually, I had this awful, awful interference. And I finally tracked it down yesterday, late morning. Boy, it's a pleasure having the radio carrier level here, the SAR-398, sitting at S0 when it's full absorption and not a bunch of, you know, a cacophony of noises.
Yeah, you're going to be around for very long. I'll switch over to the real transmitter.
Yeah, I'm having my cup of tea and finishing up some homemade cookies. I'm hearing you just fine, but I always appreciate your fine-sounding hi-fi type AM radio. And I was ready to track that noise down. Andy came over. YXK, and it's going to drop off a portable radio, but I found it. So anyway, yeah, go ahead. Do what you have to do. I'm here hanging out, and, we were talking about eyeballs.
I'll be right back.
one is ETP.
Hi, Al. Nice to hear you. Much nicer and cleaner. Not that I couldn't hear you before. Changing to IR.
That was without my EQ, which should kick in it right now. And I have to disable my receive on transmit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pretty much described my experience, the difference being my left eye had been injured when I was in my mid-20s, and that came out 25-20, and the other was 20-20, and I'm kind of surprised you mentioned secondary cataracts.
Secondary cataracts is always a possibility, but it's a high percentage where you'll get some cataractivity. It'll go around actually the new lens, but it's very easy to read in one sitting. No time, it'll be clear. I know of one person that has happened. But not just the fact of life that sometimes a cataract will start growing fat. If it doesn't happen to me, if it does, when you take it out, it won't. The only thing good about it is the reason you have secondary cataracts is because the lens material has been removed, and that just happens. That's where the cataract develops in this tissue. Live tissue can't develop acrylic lens. It grows around the edges. It'll cause your eye to get blurry because this is the advancing secondary cataract will lift one side, and it's like your lens is not parallel to the spot, the optic spot on the nerve, for you to get a good clear picture, so to speak. But that's just, there's a number of other things that can happen. Not quite as old as the cataract surgery, but in addition to, in other words, you get the effect of a nice clear lens, but very has been infiltrated by, let's say, cataract material, and some of it will grow back. It'll attempt to grow in the direction of the lens. It literally will lift once, if it's on, it's usually not symmetrical, lift once and throw things out of focus. But from what I understand, it's easily rectified.
Yep. I've been there, done that. And what happens is you're ill of the organic material gets left behind. And it starts to grow on the anterior part of the...
If you know anything about that, if that's something that I need to do, over.
Well, when you open the port, you have to tell it what kind of port it is. If it's a BNP, I'm trying to think the other name of the port. I just give it permission to open both kinds, so that way it doesn't matter. But when you go up in options under the radio configuration file, it could be the baud rate between the computer and the radio. It might be. I had that problem with my 756 Pro 2. It wants the baud rate to be set at 19 to match the CIV program so it radio correctly. If the baud rate, generally it came up at something else, I forget, the 200 or something, it wouldn't work. So check the between the computer and the radio, set it to whatever the CIV protocol says it's got to. And, under the radio configuration, you can set, obviously the COM port, the baud rate, the CIV control number has to be correct, too, like on ICOM at 64. I don't know what it would be on your 480. On the right side of that screen, you pick the brand of your radio and the model number, and you can show if it has unstable drivers in the program. But that radio is probably pretty popular, I think, because a lot of people use that and remote it anyway. The other thing you can do is that you can get the a client program running on whatever computer you're running it on. It that doesn't really require as much permissions to get the ports and all that stuff. You could log over onto my radio and see if you can get that at least working, and I can click and add you to the list and give you permission. That way you can at least see if that part works.
I'll start off on the server side. I'm looking at the radio configuration, and I've got it set up COM3 and 9600. Controlling the radio fine, like I say, it brings it up, turns it on, and I would expect that the program, when I go to check ports, is really only checking between my computer and the modem to see if the computer can get out on the internet. I don't understand that it would involve the radio itself at all. But like I say, it does seem to control the radio as far as turning it on. So beyond that, I haven't been able to get it to do anything because I can't get the client to work. And when I bring the client up, like I said, months ago we talked about this, and I had the I installed the client software on my laptop. And when it comes up, it looks more like a screen that is almost like a contest logging program screen. It shows me the list of available IDs of remote stations. It has chat. It has boxes where I can control an amp, a rotor, CW macros. And up in the top box, it says radio scan, and it's got a little window which just says default. And I can't seem to get it to show me the front panel of a radio. So I'm doing something wrong there too. So I'm kind of hopeless, I think. I'm just going to go back to no more virtual radios and just play with the hardware itself. Maybe that's what it says. This dinosaur just can't hunt. Over.
Okay, Bill. Well, the double check your manual for the baud rate for radio control of your 480, because I think that's what mine was set to, was 9600, and it would do a couple things, but it wouldn't do the right things, and it would act very strange. So I know that in the owner's manual, the ICOM, it said the baud rate for communication to the computer, if you were going to use a program, has to be set to 19.2. So just double check that, number one. Number two, sounds like you got the right client program. They won't show you a skin until you connect to a radio, so you have to connect to one. So go on the list, look for me, and connect to mine, and then you should get a skin, and you should be able to see it. And if you do that, I'll see your IP address, and I can add you as a user.
Okay. Oh boy, it sure didn't like 19.2. I switched that and restarted, and I get about six lines of the opening program. It says connecting to radio, turning radio on, turning radio on, turning radio on. Error, radio connection problem. I'm going to drop it down a few notches.
Yeah, like I said, it's in your owner's manual. I'm not sure what it's supposed to be set at for computer control, but you have to double check that one. But that's what it'll do if it's not right.
Yeah, but would that affect my ability to open or see through those ports?
That last port, yeah, is your radio control port, 843 or whatever it is. If it can't access the radio correctly, all the functions, then it'll keep calling it and trying.
Okay, well, I kept knocking it down. I did 19.2, it wouldn't connect, 14.4 wouldn't connect, so 9600, it's turned it on, and it's connecting using Handshake, Kenwood Driver, received OBIT, and it says requesting routers forward ports, and it says port forwarded for the three ports. But if I go up and check them, it'll tell me they're closed.
Yeah, and that's weird. Especially if you've opened them in the router, and you don't have any other programs running on the computer that could be blocking it. You said your McAfee you shut off or allowed it through. Could just be the Windows 10. Through the Windows 10 firewall, you might have to double check that.
Yeah, when I tried looking at the Windows firewall, and it says that security is being handled by another program, McAfee.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you know the simplest little thing like that can really stop and block things from running. Like I said, I put a VPN on my computer, and when I put the VPN on, I didn't even think twice about it, but it completely blocked the two-way communication through to remote hams, and I had to go into the VPN and allow permission for that program through the VPN so that it would connect to remote hams and still work. So, yeah, gotta love computers. They're just very technical.
Yeah, way smarter than I am. Okay, I see you in the list, and I don't know if I have to do anything special to log into you or just, yeah, it shows your radio, shows your city and all that information. So it'll be interesting. Now, look at that. I'm connected. All right, I'm going to disconnect.
Okay, I saw you connect. Let me go see. I'll add you to the list, and then you can check it out again.
That's okay. I just was. It's nice to see that I can get out. I'm going out. I'm going out through my hotspot on the phone. I figured I couldn't get to my computer coming in from inside the net. So I figured I'd better go out on the phone and with the hotspot and come back in the outside. That's what I've been trying to do. So at least it worked with getting into yours. So I've got something wrong with my coming in. So what I also am a little unclear about is, let me bring it up again, where did it go, is the hang on, when it comes back up again, I'll key up again. When I set up a new connection, I can see that it says, you know, the IP address, and I'm assuming that's the one for my router coming in. And then there's a box that is just slightly visible. I can see about half the box, and it says server. And can you tell me what should go in there?
Okay, and what screen are you on?
I'm trying to set up a new connection, so I was going to try the remote name, which is, I think, my station call, and then it has a box for the grid square, which I ignore, and then host IP, which I'm assuming is the IP address that I get from my router. Then it has server version, which I think is the 0.7, and then there's a window labeled server port, and I'm assuming, and unfortunately it's only partially visible. I don't know why that is. I can't enlarge that box, and I think maybe therein lies part of my problem. I'm not sure what goes into that box. Over.
Okay. Well, server port appears in like four different places on four different screens, and you're trying to set up what the radio configuration or that page. I guess I'm just not on the same page right now.
Okay, I brought up the client on my laptop, and up in the upper left there's a box. That little page there in the very upper left corner, and one of the account, it says new connection, my account options, about or exit. And when I click on the new connection, which is what I was going to set up to log into my home station, that is where I think I set up to be able to get into my radio. Over.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. Yeah, if you're going to connect while on the same network, if you're, like, connected on the same Wi-Fi or plugged into the same network, then you have to put in the port address would be the address of the computer that the client is on. So if the client is, like, 166.1.66.0.1, then that would be the address number you'd have to put in up there. If you're connecting when you're away from home or through, like, your hotspot not on the same network, it should automatically connect to the correct server. But if you're trying to connect on the same network, you have to put in the address of the computer, and that way you're doing it through the LAN versus doing it through the coming in from outside.
Okay. I sort of guessed that might be the case, and that's why I was going out through the phone, so I'd get off my internal LAN, so I'd come in from the outside, and I'd only need the IP address of the router. Is that right?
Oh. Yep, that's what you need. My wife was talking, and then I got distracted here for a second.
Okay, I can understand that. I think I've got to go as well. So, any rate, thanks a lot. Let me play around with this some more. What I may end up doing, I think my next step, I think, is going to kill McAfee and see if that's keeping me from getting out. And now that I know my client software will work, because, yeah, as you said, when I hooked into yours, your skin came up, and I saw your radio identified there. And on my setup for the radio configuration, that CIV number was saying that it's only if I have an ICOM. This guy is a Kenwood, so I just that didn't even come up. I can't even put anything in there. So I've got it set up for the COM3. Now it's 9600, so it's running okay. And like I say, when the server program comes up, it does recognize, it does turn it on. And so that port is at least working. I don't know, but that I thought those ports are in the router, so I'm still not certain that means anything in terms of getting out of the house. But a lot more playing to do, a lot more hair to pull. It'll take me a little bit to catch up to you, but I think I'm getting there. At any rate, thanks, Harrison. I'm going to sign, and we got some errands to run. So W1HAF, appreciate the support, K1EV.
Helps if I push the button. Well, okay, Bill, no problem. And like I said, if you log back into me, just ask for club membership, and I'll add you to that list. I added you to the transmit list, but you're not on the club list. But I will do that, and then you should be able to, if you're away, you could use mine while you're away until you get yours squared away. Okay, 7-3, have a great day. Talk to you later. W1HAF.
I appreciate that. 7-3, good morning to you. K1EV is clear.
W1HAS, testing remotely.
the, you know, for the residents of New York, you know, like 300,000, you got 8 million people in the city, the numbers don't seem to jive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we think about it, Mark. We've had 15 cases in America. 14 of them are out of the hospital and in their homes. They're fine. One is still in the hospital, and it attacks, you know, older people that already have, that are not that strong. And, you know, kids and younger people are getting better, you know, and there's treatment for it. And there's one case, I think, in California that it wasn't travel-related. And, you know, just like, really? 15 people? I don't know, man. It just doesn't all add up.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, I forget what you said for, like, just flu-like, how many deaths that they throw out, you know, as a general number across our country. But, you know, in Connecticut up here, there's only been, like, two flu deaths all year. It's like, and then they throw those gigantic numbers out from the Center for Disease Control. So my question is, where are they in the country dropping like flies?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's 350 million people in America, so the numbers were anywhere between 29,000 to 60,000. That's a pretty big gap. So they can't really seem to pin it down, because so you really don't know. Did you die? Is it chicken and the egg? Did you die from the flu, or was it a previous condition that you had? That's why there's a widespread. So even if it was 29,000, that's less. You know, that's less than 0.1%. You know, of the population, you know, I got to do my math, might be even less. You know, that's annually. So, I mean, you know, just think about that. I mean, even if I take the low number, 29,000 a year, you know, most of those are probably just in the densely populated cities, you know, the cities, you know, San Francisco, New York, you know, all the major cities. That's where probably the majority of these issues happen.
Yeah, well, then I go back to the same question. You know, if there's only two in Connecticut's a pretty densely populated state, you know. I forget how many major, I guess we would call some of our cities here kind of like pseudo-metropolitan areas, because I think, like, even with the biggest cities, you know, it probably runs between that 500,000 and a million people in a pseudo-metropolitan city. Probably less than a million, now that I think about it. Probably closer in alignment with, like, 500,000 people. But we have, like, 10 cities like that in Connecticut, so it's like, you know, and still, when you come up against it and you only see, like, two people in our state have died, where are they dropping like flies? Where are they getting those numbers from? Because it's like, it's hard to fathom that that many people are dying from the flu. I think, like you say, it's more from secondary causes. It's like, you know, when you finally do end up dying, it's with some pre-existing condition or conditions have contributed to the, you know, what your demise ends up being, you know. It's just like long before whatever the last final blow to you is, it's like you've been hit by 10 other things.
Yeah, right. I mean, my mom, she had emphysema, right? She gets the flu, she dies. Did she die from the emphysema? Well, she didn't do that, but she died from the emphysema. But did she die from emphysema? She died from the flu. So it's chicken and the egg, you know. But, you know, if you look at Connecticut, the other thing you'd have to look at is what is the percentage of people in Connecticut that are getting the flu shots? And that would explain some of that, maybe. And then you would have to kind of compare that. So the cities throughout the country that maybe didn't use the flu vaccines, you know, probably get hardest hit, you know, poverty level type people, you know, whatever. Yeah, you know, just think about it. Say you got high blood pressure, you know, and now you get the flu and you're thrown up all day, and then you get a stroke as a result of it. You know, did the flu caused it, but really it was because you had high blood pressure and you were on the razor blade edge of dying as it was. You had high blood pressure that was catastrophic, you know.
Yeah, it turns into a socioeconomic and decision-making situation when it comes to health. It's like it's a whole big ball of wax that is cumulative because would end up leading to your death. I remember it was a couple of years back. I was, you know, I've been on high blood pressure meds. Not that I have super high blood pressure, but you know, it was getting up there 150, 160 like that. You know, and so, you know, I've been on a med for a long time now. I forget what they, Lisinopro or something like that. And I said, well, I wonder, you know, this thing with across time, they tell you, well, once you're on it, you're usually on it for life. And then, you know, you read controversial papers that say, oh, you know, you can, you know, sometimes, you know, the contributing factors that you can change some of your lifestyle type of situations and deal with, you know, get your blood pressure to come down and deal without it. So I tried that for 6 months, you know, a couple of years back. And at the end of 6 months, you know, I started getting the headaches again and stuff like that, and my blood pressure was spiking up to 160 again. I said, well, that didn't work. Back on the meds again.
Well, I know for a fact that, yeah, it definitely, like, I went, I'm 211 right now, so I did an experiment, and I cut out all, and I don't drink that much alcohol, but I cut out all alcohol. Had a larger breakfast and cut my final dinner out, my last dinner of the day, you know, dinner, cut my portions in half and ate earlier in the evening, drank some tea, you know, and things, didn't snack. And I lost, I went from, actually it was 218, so I went down to 200, which I'd never been down to 200 since before I was married. And I actually got back, I got down to 193, so that's that was 25 pounds. And so I could cut my blood pressure medication, which was tiny, you know, tiny. And when I take it, it's just, my blood pressure is like, you know, 120 over 50, you know. So I found that I could cut my blood pressure medication doses like every other day. And I think if I would have lost maybe another 10 pounds, I probably would have been off of it altogether. So that, you know, there's definitely a lot of truth to that. You know, not all people can respond like that. You know, I mean, some skinny people have blood pressure problems too. You know, it's not necessarily weight related, you know, but for me, when I lost that weight, it was just amazing, man. Yeah, I wish I, you know, now I've kind of gained it back a little bit, not all of it, but most of it, and just because of the winter time and not being active out there, you know, and then eating too much at night. That's the worst mistake you can make. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm kind of guilty of that. I don't eat all day, Mike, and then I eat supper at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock at night, you know, and the rest of the day, well, I can't say I don't eat because, you know, by the time we get to 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I've had 5 cups of coffee and I have 2.5 teaspoons or better of sugar in each one of them, so I have plenty of energy from the sugar.
Yeah, but if you just run an experiment, okay, take your blood pressure, just normal, like, say started Monday, and just eliminate the coffee, drink lots and lots of water, maybe have one, just have one cup in the morning, and that's it, you know, one cup in the morning, that's it, and cut out all the coffee, you will be shocked to see how much better your blood pressure is, because that coffee is a diuretic, and I found that I was drinking so much tea during the day, I wondered, why was I getting, my blood pressure was like shooting up, and I looked at the back of this green tea, and I didn't realize green tea had got caffeine in it, and it does, but not very much, but it does, and I was drinking so much of it that my blood pressure was spiking.
Yeah, I heard that somewhere before, and I don't know if it was from you again, Mike, or something, but the people were telling me that the green tea is not great in terms of blood pressure. You know, it really causes your blood pressure to spike. So if you're a green tea drinker, there might be some health benefits, but it isn't in the high blood pressure category. You know, there might be something else there health-wise that's good about it. I haven't done the read on it in quite some time. I don't remember what it was with green tea that it got to be a chick to be drinking that. But I don't know. And yeah, it's like, plus the, you know, the lisinopril type of, it has a diuretic in it, so you're going to, you know, you're going to be visiting, you're going to be poisoning the well a million times a day anyway from the high blood pressure, man. And then the coffee being a diuretic, that just adds to the situation. So, you know, 5 cups between, you know, I probably start kicking around between 8 and 9, and by 2 o'clock I've had those 5 cups of coffee. So, you know, that's that works on your system pretty good, but the caffeine holds me up. So, that's the good part. I don't know. It's just like the whole situation starts to get dicey. You try to do things in moderation, and as always, and that usually works out to be the better way to go. And then, you know, remember a couple of years back, Mike, they a lot of the gurus, you know, they were and the hype and all that was going after a body mass index, you know, BMI things. And then some of the studies were starting to show, even though your body mass was up above what it was, a healthy, you know, by their parameters, good for your health, you know, there certainly was a group of people that, you know, their BMI was up above where it should be, and by a good amount, but they were healthier for it.
Yeah, I know. I remember they did that when I was in the corporate world down in South Jersey. They were trying to do this big push to, you know, get the whole company to live healthier, and so because they took care of a lot of our insurance, so their insurance rates would go down, and the contribution we would make, which was very little, would also go down a little bit. So yeah, the BMI was like a big thing, you know, and I used to look at that BMI. I could lose all kinds of weight, my BMI would almost be the same. I said, this is a joke, you know. They're calling for me, so I'm 5'8". They were saying that I had to be down to 175 pounds because of my height. I said, come on, seriously, I haven't been to 175 since high school. You know, since high school, I think I graduated, I was 175. If I could be that weight now, I'd probably be dying of cancer or something.
Yeah, you know, I hate to bash corporate now that you told me you were up at in corporate management type of situation, but those guys up there at the ivory towers, particularly the ones at the upper tops, you know, from the management angle of stuff like that, anything to suppress your wages. So if you're not going with the flow of what the current gurus at the top, chime in is about what your health should be like and what you should look and what color tie you should wear, and how you should always carry a cell phone with you, and they start putting in all the life rules about you, it's like, oh my God, you know, it starts to become obvious that what we're just building is an agenda of reasons to squash the guy's pay, you know. When I was working at the corporation I was at, I won't mention any names, you know, I can think of a couple of things they brought in. They wanted to start testing the structuring of management and labor force situation as teams. You know, they were taking a management technique from out of the Japanese culture and trying to apply it to the American worker. It got to the point, I was in an engineering group, I was supplemental to like a junior engineer to about 12 engineers, you know, and maybe a few more than that. And, I had one engineering manager there across the years when that policy came out. This guy, you know, everybody was going to start writing a review about everyone, you know, and they wanted me to write a review about my boss. I went into the engineering office, and I go, you know, excuse me, but, you know, I'm not going to do that. And he goes, well, you got it because, you know, corporate wants it. I go, well, you're going to have to go back to corporate and tell them I'm not going to participate. Now, I'm going to rate and give a rating to my boss, who is the guy who's supposed to be in charge of reviewing me to get me an increase, a cost of living increase, or honor me, you know, for the work that I've done that year by getting me an increase. And I'm going to review him. I go, I don't think so.
Yeah, they tried to do the same thing, and they did this lean manufacturing thing, which wasn't pretty good. That was pretty good, where you'd have lean manufacturing teams, and you'd have these Kaizen, they call them Japanese word Kaizen events, and all the teams from every cross-functional group would get together, and they'd look at a certain process and take the present state of the process, and then take all the waste out of it by identifying all the waste in the process, and then they look at it with the future state to see how much they could save, you know, and time and resource, you know. And that was really, you know, and then you had to do these evaluations on your own boss. And, you know, and if you only have a team of five people, it's pretty easy to figure out who didn't like you, you know. So that was a joke.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was coming from with that. It's like, you know, you start having junior people reviewing upper management, you find yourself suddenly in the unemployment line.
Yeah, really, unless you wanted this pencil with the thing. But, yeah, no, I was... I'm glad to be out. After, let's see, 27 years, I was with Cardone Industries down in South Philly. In South Jersey, in North Philadelphia. I had to drive in every day. And then I went to work for a company in Canada, Spectra Premium, worked for them for another 5 years. And you know, after 32 years of being in the automotive industry, I was done, man. I just, you know, you kind of lose interest after a while, you know. It's not really even a passion for you anymore, you know. You know it pretty well. It's just boring. So that's why I wanted just to take a step of faith and start my own business, and that's what I'm doing right now. And I couldn't imagine going back into an office now.
Yeah, that whole automotive industry thing, I'm trying to think what was the cause of that, though. Maybe it was the big recession so many years ago, maybe like the timetable is out like 15, 20 years ago, where the auto, you know, dealerships in the state of Connecticut just dried up, and people that were doing very well, it was like, and I think that was the same moment that they had the government supplemental thing with the pricing on cars, where they were helping out consumers and stuff, trying to boost the automotive industry. But there was a company here inside of one of my radio buddies used to work for, and he went from being like a money collecting type of guy to different dealerships and stuff like that, and troubleshooting stuff like that, right down to a counter person, because they cut back so many dealerships just in their own individual entity. This was like Hoffman Motor something Enterprises, but you know, they had a lot of dealerships and places around the state, and boy, they like dried up. And forget the small guy in Connecticut; those all the small guys just they were pretty much gone. You know, a mediocre dealership at that point in time couldn't survive.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the hard parts industry, so I was in the electrical engineering area, automotive electronics. You know, we got into our first engine. We were the first remanufacturer that remanufactured electronic control modules for GM vehicles, and then that evolved to mass airflow, and then, you know, many other different electronic devices. You know, back then in the 80s, you know, we were projecting that in 5 years, I went to work for that company in 87, we projected that in 5 years, the cost of a vehicle would be 20% in electronics, and then 10 years from now, 10-15 years from now, then it would be 40%, and when I left, it was like 50% of the cost of a vehicle is electronics. So I was in the hard parts, you know, industry. So what happened there in 2008 is because the finances, you know, just the economy went in the tank in 2008. You know, people couldn't afford to take, you know, to buy new vehicles. They were buying more used vehicles. A lot of these car companies got stuck with large inventories. They couldn't liquidate. They went bankrupt. So there's cycles in the automotive industry where you've got new buying cycles and you've got used buying cycles, you know, and it does go in cycles normally, but in 2008 was really, really bad. Anybody else in there, W2MUR?
Yeah, just listening, and nursing a cold, but we were watching the weather channel, and boy, you guys up in northern New York are getting it. We have the wind, but no snow here. How you doing, Mike? Hello, Mark, KV1AL.
Hey, Al. Good morning. I'm sure you're watching the stock market, but yeah, we're getting pounded up here, and there's supposed to be snow advisories right into Saturday.
Yeah. Well, last I saw was minus 490, almost 500. I don't know what it is now. I'm going to look it up.
It actually got as much as almost 900. Now it's back to 700 down. I wouldn't be surprised. It would be positive by the end of the day.
I know. Isn't it crazy? That's like yesterday. It started positive. It ended negative. Yeah, these wild swings. Of course, if you're a gambler, you could really do okay on those swings. But no thanks.
There's guys now are making just millions of dollars shorting and buying low and then shorting stuff. And it just, if you're into that, you're making a killing right now because of the volatility. And everybody knows there's a bottom here very soon. So I'm not really that worried about it. I mean, it's nice because even if it goes on like this, say for till the end of March, by the time election time comes along, it's going to be booming again. It's just going to help, it's going to help the whole economy. It's all about the economy, whoever's presiding, over the government, when the economy's doing really, really well, is usually going to get the credit for it one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, a lot will depend on how this coronavirus, how this thing acts. It's a tough one. And then they have in Salina, California, they had somebody who picked it up without going anywhere. So now they're saying, okay, this is the first community-borne virus. He caught it from somebody over there. So, I mean, if this continues to spread without an antidote, there really will be problems. And the thing in the news that was disturbing is how the fighting took place in the shopping centers, the supermarkets in northern Italy, where they panicked and shelves are bare and people are actually fighting over the last canned goods that are available.
Yeah, it's just such an overreaction. I was just telling Mark, it was just such an overreaction because you think about it, there's 14 people. Well, let me back up. 29,000 to 60,000 people a year die from the flu virus. So even the coronavirus is treatable. They're treating it with their certain antibiotics that they've come up with. The Ebola, the drugs that they've come to combat Ebola are being used to treat this virus successfully. So out of the 15 people in America that have had it, 13 of them are home and they've recovered, and then one is still in the hospital. And then there's one more that caught this without traveling. Think about that, too. All he has to do, all that person has to do is go touch, go into the supermarkets. You get a shipment in that somebody from China touched, and all of a sudden, it's in your supermarket food chain, Or I always wondered about this Amazon, Amazon shipment from China. I've got two water filters that are sitting, and I just put a UV filter in my water stream, and so these filters that were made in China, you wonder about that, but the viruses don't really survive, in an environment like that, they just don't. So think about the hundreds of thousands of part numbers that are coming in through Amazon that have been touched, by people that have been infected in China.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. If something comes over here, and we catch it from a product, and if somebody brought up something, all those air pillows, that's air from China. Yeah, I mean it really. I'm not about to minimize this. I know that there are comparisons with the regular flu, and there's 14,000 who die on a yearly basis from regular flu. Of course, I'm getting over something here myself. And that's bad enough. But this, being that there is no antidote, this can really mushroom, you know, and the fear. The fear is, you know, we'll start, when we start seeing fear and a run on the canned goods and, you know, staples at the store, we're really going to have a problem. Hello there, Mark. Hey, it's windy, huh? KB1AL.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there's a little breeze going on up here. I'm looking, actually, it's flurrying up here in the northwest corner right now, Al. Good morning to you. Well, I know two things, and I'm going to tell you, Mike, what they are. One of them is that Al keeps getting these colds, and he should be working on indoor antennas instead of outdoor antennas. And the other thing is that I know is that, okay, you're talking to somebody, I want to order this and this part from Amazon.com, and okay, sir, would you like a prime delivery on that? You can have it the next... Oh, no. It's coming from China. I wanted that usual two-month delivery from China, so we're sure everything is dead by the time it comes here.
Yeah, maybe Amazon's got... You know, we used to use UV lights to cure certain glues and things that were silicones that we used, gels and stuff in the mass airflow. We had this like silicone gel in the mass airflow circuitry. We had UV that cured it quickly. So you could certainly put UV lamps over all your packages and kill everything there. And even on the shipment side, you could do it. But, you know, we're at the mark right now. I have my mask on because I don't want to catch what Al has.
Yeah, I hear you, Mike, you know, and that, well, the thing that works better than that, and there's a Ensign Bickford is over here just northwest of me up here up in Norfolk, and they're one of the largest producer of syringes in the world. They have their own mini reactor over there on site, and what they use is they use radiation to kill everything, so, you know, you can x-ray everything and zap it with some radiation rays that they know will kill the virus, and you're good to go. Of course, those laptops that you guys are ordering, they may not work really well after that. Go ahead, Al.
There's a neat little program that we were discussing this yesterday about how to recover. Okay, I see what it is. How to recover your product key, and that's important stuff. You know, once you put in your Windows 10, of course, it has to come with a product key. So there was a neat program that I put it on the Coots page. How to recover the product key, and it does work. Very interesting.
You know, I can't believe you're mentioning that. Yesterday, I was going through some things, and it popped up. I know what it was. I was on the Microsoft site. I was updating some of my contact information, and it said recovery. Here's your recovery code. I'm thinking it's like a 100-digit number. You know, okay, so now I got to take time. I got to get my little... I have a program that contains all my passwords and important information on my iPad, so I got to put that in there. And it took me, 5 minutes to get all this information in there so that I could pull that up if I ever needed to. So I can't believe you're mentioning that, Clint.
I think it's my expert on the other side of Mark Hampstead there, Mr. Lefebvre. I give it to the expert. I gotta waste most of my creative time on Capusta, and I let Pat take care of software.
Well, anyway, there's a link, and it's on the Microsoft forum, so it's not something that's foreign. It's not something ridiculous, but Okay, I'm just file name, save it as a. Okay. Yeah, you got to watch how you save this thing. All file. Okay, here. I got to try to. I want to save this little program. Here we go. Let's try this. Save. It already exists. Yeah, okay. Productkey.vvs. So productkey.vvs already. Yeah, let's do that. Okay. So if you run this little program, it gives you the product key. It really works.
I'll be right back, guys. I got to go check out a 20-meter frequency. I put up an antenna a few days ago for one of the guys in town. He gets on his Swedish United 11. I want to see how this thing sounds. Okay, Alpha 1, X-ray pop. I'll catch you guys in a bit.
And 1ALF.
Yeah. How you doing there, Rob?
I got a mask on my speaker microphone, so I don't catch nothing from you.
I know. Watch out. Yeah, but I got my meds now. I did go to the Media Medical, and I did get antibiotics. So we've been taking that, and I think we're getting better now. But when I get a cold, it stays with me for a while.
Okay. So, Al, that's a good reason not to buy used mics.
Actually, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, for sure. No, get them fresh. Get the fresh Way mic. Oh, geez, that's right from China.
Yeah, well, you got the Chinese girl testing the mics at quality control.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, anyway, we got the product key, printed it out, so we're good. That's interesting. You were looking for the same thing, Mike. But anyway, I do. It's a forum on the Microsoft page blog, and so I put that out there on the Coots page. Like I say, it does work. It did come up with the 20. There's 20. Boy, there's a password for you, huh? A 20-digit passcode, or I should say character, 20-character passcode. We got it. You know, you never know. You know, you screw up on this thing. And, of course, they are still upgrading from Windows 7 to 10. They want you to do it. First time, you know, that I remember that, they want you to get into 10 so bad, they'll give it to you free.
Well, I upgraded my Windows 7 to 10 there just not too long ago, and I hear from whispering in the wind that 11 may be coming out. That's why they're pushing it.
Elf, you got your amp on?
How about that? That better?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, I was running comfortable 35 watts.
Oh, you were running QRP like Mark? No, Rick and I... We were talking, and these two guys came in running QRP, or one guy was running QRP. He was running 500 milliwatts.
Yeah, I think that's John from over, what you call it there, over to Putnam Valley or something. I think he's over by the Hudson. I've worked him on AM.
Yeah, he's down in Winnipeg. I heard Winnipeg. I have a low noise level, except for the snow static, low noise level, and he was maybe a couple less units below my lowest noise.
Yeah, I did hear him. I've worked him once before.
Yeah. I got to switch over here.
Let me hear you. Okay, here's what 1 milliwatt sounds, or 1 watt sounds like.
What'd you say, Mike?
Yeah, I could barely hear you in there, Mike.
I copy him fine.
You're kidding me. You copy that?
N1 CJL. Yeah, I heard you. You're about an S34 over here.
Could hear you in New Hampshire also.
I heard you fine, Mike, and M3 line.
You got to have a good antenna.
I heard you fine, Mike.
I
and M3Y.
I have a good antenna, but I could hear. I could copy you.
Yeah, Bob's got you down there in Pennsylvania too.
Good morning, everybody.
Yeah. Hey, Bob. Yeah, we've done those tests before, but no, I was barely able to pick you up, Mike. And I agree with CJL. Yeah, it's yeah, our good antenna. All right, but the other thing is conditions and distance and all that stuff.
Bob, how you doing? Good morning. And,
good morning, everybody.
And CJL, right? That's Jim.
Yeah, hi, Mike, and everyone else on frequency.
I'm on the Vermont-New Hampshire border.
Very good. And good morning, Bob and Alf and everybody. Yeah, so you know what? Yesterday I was fooling around on my dummy load with the remote right on this frequency. I could hear you on my dummy load.
Yeah, the dummy antenna for the dummies. Oh, man.
Mike, you did say dummy load, right? And Artie's out there.
I apologize, Artie. No personal attack intended.
Somebody trying to write the word dummy load with Artie into a
camera. Yeah. Finally, we're talking over Artie. Artie, come on, speak.
What do you mean, speak? You're talking over me. 500 watts, you can't hear me?
Well, no, you're S8. But, yeah, you know, you got your daytime conditions. Boy, I tell you, those wires are blowing around right now.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah. You pumped up, I know.
You know what? Mike just said, somebody said something about listening to you on the dummy load. And I hear you all the time on my dummy load down here.
See, inquiring minds want to know.
I was at 1930 one time fooling around on the dummy load, and everybody could hear me.
No kidding. Yeah, I hear a lot of guys on the dummy load on 1930.
I set you up for that.
Good one. Oh, but so anyway, you're in the Tug Hill Plateau. They're talking feet of snow for you, Mike.
It was a triple.
Mike, you getting snow?
You talking to me?
Yeah, you getting snow?
Yes, I am. I thought there was another mic on there. I apologize. But, yep, I'm getting... It rained last night, so I did something unusual. I fell asleep on the couch, which I never do. Got up 2 in the morning. It's pouring rain out, and I couldn't go to sleep. Finally got to sleep, and I woke up probably 7:30, 8 o'clock, and it's like a blizzard out. It's absolutely like a blizzard. And I'm looking at my antenna, and I'm thinking, okay, so I'm going to have a DOG, a dipole on the ground here pretty soon if this keeps up. But no, my antenna held up, and it didn't blow down.
Yeah. Well, it ain't over yet. Actually, it's supposed to go on till tomorrow. But they were showing from the Weather Channel, they were showing Mike Seidel is on the shores of Lake Erie, and the waves are coming over the wall. They are getting nailed. And we got a couple guys who come in here from the Buffalo area. They are getting nailed.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we've got a winter storm watch till Saturday, I believe.
Yeah, and you're right, Alf. Yeah, nothing. The lakes did not freeze up this year.
Hey, Artie, is it someone? Anyway, give us a little chat there. We'll see how you're doing across the pond here.
Yeah, okay. I sent you a text. I don't know if you received it or not.
Got to find my phone. It's on the other side of the shop.
Well, that's no fun.
All right, give me a little squawk to see what you're doing here today.
Say again?
I said, give me some modulation. I want to see what you're doing here.
Guys, I would like opinions. I was listening to myself yesterday, and I was not happy with the audio. I thought it was too over the top. It was too loud. It was distorted, and so on and so forth. I made some EQ changes, and right now this is one EQ change. This is without the compression, and This is without the compression, and now I'm going to hit the button, and now I'm going to give you compression as I'm talking. And I'm just curious, for the clarity, whether or not you can be better compression on and compression off. That's my spiel. Alf?
Definitely compression on here.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm voting for compression on, yeah, because you're only about an S5 to a 6 here, KB1AL.
Yeah, compression better, Artie.
All right, so is the clarity there? It's not over the top. You hear the highs and lows. It's a little bit more understandable because the other, I think the other way was just too much over the top.
I think it's perfect.
Yeah, you're fine.
Well, I talked to you on the phone, so you sound you. You sound just like you do.
Okay, yep. So we'll leave it here then. Okay, guys, thank you much.
And your signal just did come up, too, and there's somebody up the band. You're off frequency.
Yeah, Artie, you're your usual S9, sometimes peaking 5 to 10 over like you always are.
Yeah, and Artie, that compression improves your signal strength by almost 3 dB. And your audio is very good. You know, a nice balance of highs and lows. And you're punching through, not a very strong signal here, but you're punching through. I can hear you.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Like I say, I was trying to make some contacts, DX, yesterday, and there were stations that had difficulty hearing me. And then I put the headphones on. I started listening to myself. I said, uh-oh, this is not good. So I made some changes yesterday, and just want to make sure, in fact, that I'm on the right path.
Yeah, leave it there.
All right, I got to let the dogs out. I'll be back in when you left.
All right, I'll leave it here. All right, I'm going to tend to stuff in the kitchen. I'll be back momentarily. N2XPM, thanks again.
All righty, NM3Y.
Yeah. Bob, you're probably not getting any snow there, are you?
No precipitation predicted either. I mean, we have a lot of high winds here, but other than that, we're going to have 4 days of, you know, basically cold weather, which is probably much more normal towards the end of February. And then once we get through these 3 or 4 days, it's going to warm back up again. And then I saw, man, it's going up into the high 50s and then dipping back down into the, mid 40s after a couple of days of the 50s. So it's kind of crazy, but no snow. We've had no snow at all this winter, and I'm darn glad because I was in no shape to be pushing a snowblower around after my second operation. So it worked out well.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to square up with the neighbor across the street, and three times he plowed the driveway. But boy, that was long in the past. That was back in December. We had, and it started off like, oh boy, we may get some here. It started off where we had some snow, there were three storms. You know, 4 to 6 inches. You know, not, I think one was 6 inches of snow. And then there was that ice pack that hung around for a while. But since around Christmas, we've been pretty much snow free. The grass is exposed here. There's no snow at all. Even, you know, over at the parking lot over there at ShopRite, they pile it up into one section of the parking lot. Sometimes it doesn't melt till June, but it's melting off. It's melting down. There's just a small section left here. So the snow is. And temperatures are bouncing around like the Dow average. Now it's down -460. So, man, it's been all over the place. From minus about 900, now it's -460. You're right, Mike. It might end up in the plus zone.
Was it down -900 today?
Yes.
Let me turn that scanner off. Wow.
Yep, you know, it's way overrated. You know, it's just the media doesn't help that much. But, you know, like Al was saying, you know, it's not anything to sneeze at, no pun intended. But, Bob, so you're up there in Lehigh County. Do you remember, have you been over in South Jersey? I used to live in Delran, New Jersey. And I remember in, late 90s, I believe. It was like 97, 99. We had a May snowstorm that dumped about 3 or 4 feet on us.
Yeah, but I think that was like 2000 though, or 2001 or something like that. I know up here, I'm in Carbon County, just up above Lehigh County. Up here, we had gotten 36 inches of snow, and then a couple of days later, we got 33 inches of snow.
No, I remember that. You know, I remember that was a snow emergency in Philadelphia. That was the second biggest one, but there was one before that, a few years before that, in May, and that was a gigantic snowstorm. Man, the kids had a blast in that. We weren't used to seeing that kind of snow down in, because we're from upstate New York, but my kids, my youngest was New Jerseyite, and my oldest was over 2 years old when we moved from upstate New York down to South Jersey, so they had a blast.
Well, I remember when you were, we were talking about, you lived in, you were, you know, familiar with Delran, Riverton, that area there. Years ago, I was in a business where I got into those, all those towns along Route 130. Every day, I was up and down those towns, Willingboro, Burlington, all the way down to Camden, Collingswood, you know, and just keep going. But yeah, okay, I knew exactly where you were. I used to live in Ardmore, which is 6 miles west of Philadelphia. I lived there for 30 years. Have you heard of Ardmore? I'm sure you probably have.
Oh, absolutely. It's beautiful. That's a beautiful community, and there's lots and lots of beautiful communities up that way. I remember, though, when these, I would drive into Northeast Philly in a rear-wheel drive Mazda MPV, and the governor of the state shut down and said nobody was allowed on the roads. But I went on the road anyway and tried to get into work, and I almost got stuck and didn't get out, but I quickly went home after a good try to get across the Tacony, and it just didn't work out. I got stuck on the ramps.
Oh, man, that's got to be a pretty sick feeling.
Yeah, we were diehards. You know, it was like a big challenge because I was on the leadership team, and nobody else was coming into work. So that was back in the days we'd get orders on the fax machine. So we would all gather around the fax machine, take the orders. We'd start pulling, you know, gigantic business. But, you know, we'd all gather around, try to keep some of the big orders out and get them out. And it was crazy. We had a lot of fun, though, doing that. And we did. So, Al, you remember those days driving around as a detective? And, you know, you still had to protect the public.
Yeah, when it got real bad, you had to put on chains. Yeah, and then, you know, we had, you know, orders out to just park in place, stay in strategic areas. You didn't want to call everybody to come in. Although headquarters was pretty centrally located, but it was better to have guys out in, let's say, you know, some of the gas stations or, you know, various areas in town so that, you know, if need be, they could respond. But, yeah, I was on the desk during the storm of 78, where they shut down the highways here in Connecticut. But, you know, we still have, I remember getting those emergency calls, you know, for ambulance. And I remember they walked somebody, or they had them in a stretcher, and they had to walk down this hill. They couldn't get up there with the ambulance. The ambulance was parked out on the main road, and they carried this person, slept them in the snow, you know, on a stretcher. And they had to get, it was the only way they could get him. The other thing that's surprising is during those times, there are so many people who are on dialysis. It was a small town in between two larger towns, and we would be picking people up from one town who had to be transported to a hospital in the other town. We were like the go-between, so we would transfer them from a police department in Norwalk. We would take them through town, and we would drop this person off with a police officer in Stamford. So, and it's funny because each town, I mean, they had their own hospitals, but yet, you know, they had to go where there were openings. So you'd have a person from one town where there was a hospital, but there was no opening for dialysis. We'd have to ship them over to the other town and, you know, back and forth. Well, we got one to go back. And it was like we were a courier for so many people on dialysis. Or the other ones, too. You had doctors and nurses. They couldn't get their, they couldn't make it into work. And, all right, pick them up from one officer, you know, one department, and you go schlep them to the other side of town, and another department would pick them up. But, you know, these were people in essential services, and they could not get to work. But we became the, you know, the transporters.
25 over, Al.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's on the dual antennas. Yeah, you're coming in fine, too, Bob.
You know what? Mike hit it on the head. I, you know, for years, it was a challenge. And it was fun, okay? Some of the stuff I did when I was younger, I mean, even up to the age of 50 or 52, I mean, it just seemed like stuff was still fun, still a challenge. You still did crazy stuff, and, oh, man, now it is nothing more than a pita. I mean, I can't stand it.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, Bob, you're almost 30 over here. You got beautiful audio, too, so nice. What kind of radio are you running?
I'm going to let Al answer that question.
he's on the venerable TS-2000 with a MC-80 microphone plugged directly in. How about that one, Mike?
You wow. Cheater.
Wow, I never heard a 2000 ever sound that good.
Yeah, right?
That's this 34-year-old MC-80 microphone I'm talking on.
With a homebrew 3-500 amplifier.
Copy that.
Oh, that helps. You know, but, you know, the TS-2000 and the TS-590S, I mean, and the TS-480, I didn't have the 2000, but I had the 480 and the 590, and the audio on both of those was just terrible. Whatever mic I tried to put on it, the 590, the bias just wasn't correctly set on the 590S. They tried to correct it on the SG. But no matter what I did, no matter how I set the bar, I had the remote radio software, and I could set the the equalizer, 18-band equalizer, any way I wanted to. There was no way I could get any of these, any mic I tried on that to work. It was just a beautiful receiver, but a horrible transmitter package, I'll tell you.
You know what else there is, Al?
Oh, what's that?
You also have to include the fact that I'm operating off the homebrew 30-amp regulated power supply.
Geez, there was one of the guys, he posted a picture on the Coots, the noise he was getting from a switcher supply, and I have one of those too, the pyramid switcher. I think it's a 30 amp or 35 amp. And I have several. One of them is very quiet, is very good, but not DJ, it was Brandon, who comes in the later part of the afternoon. And he showed these spikes he was getting on his whatever receiver. He has a 7600 rig. So he took a screenshot of the spikes he was getting from that switcher supply. And we guessed it was a switcher, and it was. He got another supply in there, and he's okay. But, you know, nothing like and I'm sure that's a linear supply you got running there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about that. But if you remember a couple of weeks ago, well, maybe time's flying by so fast, it's probably been over a month now, I lost my MSJ 4225 that I had for 8 to 10 years that worked absolutely flawlessly. Without any question, that thing was just never had any issues with noise or anything. And you might remember I told you it was on one day and I had one of the radios on and the radio just shut off, just sitting there in a receive mode. And I lost the supply, and that's it. Sitting over there on a bench, now I'm going to have to part it out.
And that's a switcher, huh?
Yeah, that's the MFJ 4225. It was like $99 back then. I think it's like, I don't know, $119 now. They're made in Taiwan. It works flawless, but, you know, just typical switcher, you know, just drops out.
Hey, Breaking news, China opened up all the Starbucks. That's a good sign.
NN3Y.
KB1AL.
W2MUR.
You talk about, getting back to what you said earlier, though, Bob, you talked about, the crazy things that we do younger, and now finally, some sense rings true, and part of that is like skiing. I remember at like 20, 21, went up to one of the local hills here, and I was ready to go. And I was with this girl, and the things that you just exuberance, youthful exuberance, right? Hey, I'm going to go down the expert hill, and she warned me, no, I don't think you should do that. And for some reason, I listened to her. I stayed on the bunny hill. It was my first time skiing, and I survived. I survived. And I'm thinking now, I could see it now. I was looking up at that expert hill, and boy, that was high. And they're flying down that. And, that's something, and I have not skied since. I just didn't take to it. But there's something you just don't do in your old age.
Oh, man. I work with this woman at Channel 10, and she told me she's 74 years old. I used to bust on her all the time. When are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? And she told me she was going skiing. This was several years ago. She was going skiing with her daughter up here at the Blue Mountain Ski Resort, which isn't too far. It's about 25 minutes from here, I guess. But anyway, I said, oh, my God, you're kidding me.
Well, someone who's a skier, and you see that a lot, where they've been skiing, all their lives, and, so it comes as second nature, and all right, that's another story. But I remember getting on ice skates. There's another one. We had a local pond in the town that I worked in. So I'm out there with the kids, my wife, and we had some friends with us, too, and, man, I took a tumble. And they're on the other side of the pond. They said, geez, the whole pond shook. What was that? Oh my God, Al fell. Can you imagine doing that now? Geez, I'd have a broken hip. I took a fall, a couple of falls here the last couple of years. One with the dog. I stopped short as she cut in front of me. And another time off of a stepladder. And, man, I'm just so lucky I didn't snap the hip. Boy, that's like, you're dealing with a walker and a cane for years after that one.
Yep. When I ski, I just take it easy now. I mean, I've skied all my life, and when I go skiing, I just take it easy. And the only trap I fell into is following my boys, my sons. They snowboard, so I followed them down a trail, and I face-planted. I went back to look and see what I tripped on. I couldn't even find what I tripped on. But that was probably the only time I can remember falling when I was older like that. And we do some wakeboarding as well, but I can't really stay up that long. And it seems like every time I fall, I mess my ear up. So, I mean, I'm with you. There's things you got to be a little more careful about these days. But my dad, when he was older, and younger, he would have this ability to fall from ladders and larger heights, and he would just have this ability to hit the ground and roll, and he'd pop right up, never got hurt. We used to call it his name was Bud, so we used to call it the Bud Murray roll, and I've kind of inherited that a little.
Alpha Alpha One X-ray, Papa.
Yeah.
How'd your antenna do?
Mark, how's the ant?
Oh, it's coming along. I'm working on it right now. I'm just listening to you guys, but I got a million ski stories.
Oh.
Yeah,
That's I think the reason that my lower back bothers me really today is I took a real bad crash one time, and I almost blacked out, and it was all my lower back, and you know, it took me a good couple of months to pull. I never did go to the hospital or anything, and I recovered, but I swear to God that's why my lower back bothers me today.
Yeah, but you know, and those are such, yeah.
619, caller.
CQ, CQ, CQ Parks on the air, CQ Parks on the air. Kilowatt Bravo 2, Tango, Golf Uniform. KB2, TGU, operating from K1619, High Point State Park, Northwest New Jersey. Over. CQ, CQ, CQ Parks on the air, CQ Parks on the air. Kilowatt Bravo 2, Tango, Golf Uniform. KB2, TGU, operating from K1619, High Point State Park. Over. CQ, CQ, CQ Park.